The following interview was taped with Mr. William Clavitz on January 6, 1976. Mr. Clavitz is 81 years old and now lives on Morris Street on Green Bay's east side. He was born and lived most of his life in the town of Humboldt in Brown County. His ancestry is Flemish Belgian.
Mr. Clavitz, where were you born?
In Humboldt.
When?
April 11, 1895.
And how long had your parents lived around there?
All their life.
They were born there?
Yeah. My mother was born in Preble. Dad was born in Humboldt, too.
Were you born on the family farm?
Mm-hmm.
The Clavitz family farm. And what was your mother's name?
Cecilia.
Vandenberg?
Vandenberg. The daughter of this man here. She was the youngest.
How many children had been in her family?
There was 3 girls and 2 boys.
So she was first generation American then?
Yeah.
Because her father was Belgian. What nationality were your parents?
They were all Flemish Belgian, both sides.
Did they speak Flemish at home?
They sure did.
So you know how to speak it too?
Well, I can't speak it too well, but if somebody come by here and start talking, I'd know what he was saying.
Did you ever learn to read it?
No.
But could your parents read Flemish?
I think they could a little bit. Not too much either.
Where did you attend school, Mr. Clavitz?
The water division out there.
How did that get its name?
Well, the water on the east side went to Lake Michigan and the rest on this side came to the Fox River.
Now, is that the building that's still standing?
No. That was the old one-room school was destroyed about, well, they tore it down about 1917 or 18 and built a two-room school.
And that's the one that's there now?
Now this is the last year that's going to be in operation because they're building that new one at Luxembourg there for the first 6 grades.
So it's still in operation this year?
Yes.
I see.
One room was cut out for 1 year and then they opened that up again, so the 2 rooms are working all the time now.
So it'll be empty after this year?
It'll be empty. And they have to sell it. The other two, Martinsville and the one in Champion, I think are sold already.
What church did you attend when you were young?
St. Mary's, all my life, with the exception of a few years at Sugar Bush there, where they consolidated to.
Was that a Flemish Belgian church?
That was a Flemish church. The other one was a Belgian church.
Which other one?
St. Hubert's.
St. Hubert's in Brown County?
Yeah, in the same town of Humboldt.
Oh, because there is also a St. Hubert's in Rosier, right?
That's right.
So the Walloon Belgians went to St. Hubert's?
Yes.
And the Flemish went to
St. Mary's.
St. Mary's. What were the services in? Were they in Flemish or?
I don't know what religion you are. The Mass is a Latin Mass, but the sermon was half Flemish and half English because there were a few die-hard old ladies that wanted the sermon in Flemish the way they had it in Europe. And there were some of my relatives too.
Oh! Well now, did all these people, like your parents and aunts and uncles, did they speak both English and Flemish?
Mm-hmm. My grandmother couldn't, I guess, on my mother's side, but my granddad, he could. Yeah.
Well, if they had to do shopping or anything like that, where did they go?
Well, there was a little grocery store in Sugar Bush there. They went there. If they needed something big, well, then they came to Green Bay with a team.
How long would it take them to come into Green Bay?
Well, it took a whole day to come and to go back home. That'd be 26 miles for a team.
One way?
No, both ways.
So it's 13 miles.
Now you can make that in 30 minutes.
What was the day like on the farm when you were growing up?
Well, you got up in the morning and milked the cows and fed the horses and slopped the pigs. Then breakfast was ready, and then you went out in the field and worked, made wood or something, or done the harvest, field harvest, dredging and stuff.
What did you do in the winter?
Well, in the winter when I was a kid, I went to school till I was about 14. And then I stayed home one winter, and after that, then I went to the lumber camp.
So when was it that you started going to the lumber camps?
1912.
Was that near the end of the lumber camp days, or?
No, they run until about 1930, I think, or 35. But the best part was, the nice part was off the pine timber was gone. And we had to monkey around with the hardwood. And that was pretty hard work.
When you started, was it hardwood?
Yes.
So the pine was all gone by the time you started?
The pine was all gone.
Had your father gone to the camps?
Yes, he worked in the pinery. He was a sawyer. They floated those logs to the mills down the rivers.
Did you ever see them do that?
I never saw them do that.
What did they do in your day?
All trucked to the sleigh, hauled to the railroad, and then loaded on cars and shipped it to the mills.
What did they use to pull the sleighs?
Horses.
Horses.
Yeah. And later on, I worked in one place where they had a heavy caterpillar. They used to take four loads out at a time. Two trips a day.
What did the camps look like?
Well, they were about, I would say, about 8 feet high, and then a roof on lumber and tar paper over that, all logs and masoned in with mortar. In the corner they had a big zinc, a wooden zinc. And a wooden barrel the chore boy had to carry the water in there from the creek. You never had hot water to wash your hands or your face. And I went where there was a new camp just put up in the fall, and the ice was on there about that thick. You had to take a wash dish and break that, and my wrists here, they were cracked as the blood run out of them.
From the cold water?
From the ice water. Take one of them granite dishes and knock the hole through it.
Did you sleep in a different building than the place where you ate, or was
yes,
it
all? Yes, yes. Yeah, the sleeping camp. They had a whole row. One was the cook camp, sleeping camp, then they had an office, and here was the barn for the horses.
How much would you make working in the lumber camps?
Well, a dollar and a quarter a day, some days, some years when it was bad, a little depression, you got a dollar. Then it went up the last winter I was in, and I got $85 a month. That was 26 days, and you're bored.
What month would you go to the camps?
Middle of October.
And you would stay until?
About the 25th of March or the 1st of April.
And you never came home
never.
During that time. What was Christmas like in the camps?
Just like it is here today. Only some fellows went and got a burlap full of booze. I seen two guys walking around Moss to get a gallon jug, and when they got 100 feet from the camp, they slipped and fell on the rail with the jug and broke it to pieces. Oh, they were mad and swearing they're Frenchmen.
So how much would you expect to make in a whole winter's work in those days?
Well, an average winter would be about $125.
For the whole winter?
For the whole winter.
How did you go to the camp? From Green Bay or?
Well, we took the train always. And then you walked in sometimes 9 miles after you got off.
Did you have any recreation in the camps at all?
Nothing. You were glad to lay down instead of recreation.
You worked 6 days a week?
6 days a week.
What was the day like there? What time did you get up?
5:30. And at 9 o'clock they turned the lights out on you. Kerosene lamp in that corner, another one in that corner.
So you would get up at 5:30, then when would you be in the woods after breakfast and everything?
You had breakfast and you put on your clothes, your coat, your jacket, and mittens and cap, and you went right out to the job.
And you walked to the site wherever?
That's right. More than one winter that we walked 4 miles to our work.
Then what about your lunch?
They used to bring that out, and sometimes we had a little building as big as our garage here, a little stove in there, and that we would warm up our own that we took along in the morning. The cook would fix that up for us.
But when they brought it to you, how did they get it out there?
Well, they had them cans about so high, you know, with beef stew and potatoes and everything. The box with your knives, forks, spoons, and cup and plates. Everything was tin plates.
They'd bring it out on a sled or?
On a bobsled.
On a bobsled.
Yeah. One horse.
And you would just sit out in the cold and eat your food?
Mm-hmm. That was nice. You didn't waste any time eating, I'll tell you that.
You didn't get an hour for lunch, did you?
No, I bet not.
Wouldn't your food get cold sitting out there in the
Well, sure, it got cold. But by the time it started turning color, you were through. Then they had a box about that square and maybe about so high with slides in, and that's where they had their pie in.
How many men would usually be in one of these camps?
Well, I was in camps where we were at 25 to 125.
Did you usually go with the same ones every year? Or?
No, we went to different places.
Was it moving farther north every year? Or?
Yeah, sometimes it was farther north, then we'd come back this way, further south again. The closest I was about 102 miles from Green Bay here. And now they talk about tearing that old track up.
The railroad track.
89 miles of track they figure out tearing up. From Gillett to Iron River. Well, they figure it costs $42,000 a mile now for just for the ties alone. Mm-hmm. They were lucky years ago if they got $1.27 for a good tie. Now I read this winter that they run as high as $14 a piece.
For railroad ties?
For railroad ties. Mm.
What kind of food did you have in the camps?
Well, we had bread, oleo, potatoes, beef stew, sometimes a pork roast, a rice pudding, cookies or donuts, pancakes in the morning.
Sounds pretty good.
So she makes them here about twice a week. Do you like them?
What?
Pancakes. But they have to be warm.
Was the cook usually a woman?
A couple of winters we had lady cooks, mostly men.
So otherwise there wouldn't be any women in
no,
the camps?
No.
Unless the cook happened to be a woman. Then what time would you quit in the afternoon?
When it was dark.
When it was dark, then you'd come back in and...
Mm-hmm.
Have your supper at the camp?
Mm-hmm.
When did you stop going to the camps?
Somewhere in the low 1930s, I think.
Why did you stop going?
Well, my folks were home alone and they were getting up in years, and I figured somebody should really be there.
What happened when World War I came, Mr. Clavin?
Well, I was working in Milwaukee that time, Wallace Chalmers, making ammunition for England. The Bethlehem Steel Company got a big order from England, and they sublet a big contract to Wallace Chalmers. And I never forget another fellow from the same place as I lived there in Humboldt. We went to Milwaukee. And we went down there about 9 o'clock to the gate where they hired, and oh, there was a bunch of people there, all foreigners. There was a guy, he asked what nationality they were. Well, all different nationalities. They didn't want to. What nationality are you fellas? Belgians. Go in ahead, get in through the door and work.
Was the man a Belgian?
I don't know what he was, but I suppose he had his orders what nationalities to hire.
Couldn't do that today, could he?
Not very well. But it worked that time. The first day we worked till 9 o'clock at night.
Did you make better money working in the factory?
I tell you, we worked for 18 cents an hour. And paid board, laundry, and car fare.
So you really didn't make very much money there?
We didn't make much there, but we were inside. That's a big place there, about 13,000 people working there that time.
How long did you work there?
About a year and a half. And I registered for the army from there. So I went in. And when I got on the train there, and all these boys from around here that I knew, they were on before I got on. We all went to the same place, but we were put in different companies.
Where did you train?
Battle Creek.
Did you go by train to Battle Creek?
Oh, sure.
Did you go by ferry across the lake or around Chicago?
No, we went around Chicago by train. We got in there about 11 o'clock at night. By the Deagle. Next morning you get up as though you've been there all your life.
How long did you train?
Till the first days of March. Then we got on a train and through Detroit, past Niagara Falls, and to Camp Merritt in New Jersey. We were there about 10 days and away we went.
You went over by ship?
Mm-hmm.
To France?
Yep, Saint-Nazaire.
What kind of a ship was it?
Well, that was one that they took away from the Germans. It was 107 or 10 German ships landed in the harbors of this country, and they glommed them all.
When the war started, they...
Yeah, yeah.
I see.
When they declared the war.
That's the one you gave us the information on,
right.
The Pocahontas.
Yeah.
Then how long were you overseas?
Pretty near a year and a half, I guess.
Were you in the trenches?
No. I was in railway engineers. Doing all kinds of rail work.
Did you have to be skilled to do that?
No. The skilled men, they were all there long before we were. They formed that company at the Navy Pier in Chicago. They trained there for a while and away they went too.
Did you get a chance to go into Belgium at all while you were there?
About from here to Three Corners, I guess that's about all. Which we shouldn't have done either. You ain't supposed to be away from your place where they put you. But there was no officers came around there, so we just took it upon ourselves to go. We might have been in the guardhouse if they did catch us.
Then when you came back from the war, you started going back to the camps in the winter.
Yeah.
And then you would come back to your parents' farm in the spring?
Yeah, then I worked for other farmers. Then in the fall I went along with a custom thrashing machine, thrashing grain for about 55 days. Then a guy wants me to work for him, baling hay. Then it's time to go to the woods again.
So you didn't really work on your parents' farm that much?
Not too much. When I started, it is when my youngest brother left home.
So there were no other kids to help out?
There was nobody there anymore to help them, so I had to be there.
Was it a dairy farm?
Yeah, a small operation, like everybody else's.
How many cows?
Oh, they're on as high as 12, I guess. I just got a picture out of the Sentinel this morning. I want to show you something.
When did you get married, Mr. Clavitz?
1936.
And how old? You would have been?
41.
41. How did you meet your wife?
Well, she was a nurse at Shawano Lake at the boys' camp there. And my brother, he was taking care of the camp. And I would go and visit him, and there she was.
So then after you got married, what did you do for a living?
Then I bought the place, the farm.
From your parents?
Mm-hmm.
And then you, how many cows did you have when you were farming?
Well, I built an addition to the barn, and we were running at about 20 milkers then.
Did you have a machine?
We bought a machine.
When was that?
Oh, that's hard telling just when that was. I never used it. The kids had always used it. But it was nice. Mrs. always wanted us to get a machine. She told the guy to put it in when and I wasn't home and he came to put it in.
How many cows could a person milk by hand?
Well, I tell you, when my youngest son was born and Mrs. was in the hospital, we had 11 that was milking, and I tried it once, and that was the last time I ever tried it. I got a neighbor kid to help me. You could go about 8, and that's enough.
So, you had to have help. You had to have children, or you had to hire somebody?
You had to hire somebody.
How many children did you have, Mr.
Clark? 5.
5?
Yeah.
So they were a big help to you, I guess, on the farm.
Oh, sure.
Then when did you sell the farm?
That would be 5 years ago, on the 1st of June.
5 years ago?
Yeah. I rented it for 9 years before I sold it to them.
And who did you sell it to?
To the oldest boy, the one standing next to me over there.
So you've kept that same land in the family now for how many years?
Since 1890.
And your grandfather bought it, or your...
My dad bought it, and cleared it all. He had auction.
Did you help clear land?
Oh, sure I did.
And you did it with crosscut saw, by hand?
Well, the biggest timber was off then, but then it was the poplar and birch, and we used that for firewood. Things were pretty tough those days. We had no storms on the windows, no storm doors. In the summer there was no screens on. That was terrible. Later on, times got a little bit better, and then they got those things. You had a barn with one window in. Today barns are nothing but windows, from one end to the other.
I guess it was dark in there with no windows.
Oh, sure it was dark. Run to the barn with a little lantern. I know I went to the barn one evening, and it was so windy and stormy that the lantern blew out the light. But then I went in the silo and lit it again. I didn't want to do it in the straw in the barn. I didn't want to see no fire.
Mr. Clavis, did the Flemish have any special celebrations like Kermis or anything?
The second last, or the last Sunday in September was the Flemish Kermis. And the Belgian that year, the second Sunday in October.
And where was this Flemish Kermis held?
On the Humboldt Road. What they call, I can't think of the name.
There wasn't a town though. It
was just a tavern, and there was the hall. And once in a while, someone would get drunk and there'd be a good fight.
Did the Flemish and the Walloons mix very much?
Oh yes, they got together. One went to one place, and the other went back and forth. And then over here in Preble, they had their Kermis on the 9th of July at Holy Martyrs of Gorkum congregation. And I understand they called that parish that name because in Europe they slaughtered 900 Catholics there at one time, the different religious factions.
So would you go over there to Preble to their Kermis and they would come over to yours?
There they had two halls. The one I was trying to figure out, the one you asked me, that was Rainbow Garden, they call that.
And it was a dance hall?
Yeah.
Was there any church service with Kermis at all? Or?
Not in Humboldt, but at Sugarbush they had the mass on Monday and on Tuesday. That was a 3-day Kermis. Sunday it started and Monday, and then on Tuesday night it finishes off. As soon as the church service was over, the band was out there blowing away. Anything like that where you lived?
No, not really.
Not true. It's all gone now.
There's no more celebration of Kermis?
No more celebration.
Were there any foods that were Flemish foods, like did you eat Belgian pie?
Mm-hmm. They have that yet there. Oh, they have a little doings on Sunday afternoon at Sugarbush there. And then you can go and eat all the pie you care for. Then they expect you to do a little of this over the bar.
Were there any other Flemish dishes that were different?
I would say no. Only the Flemish, when they butchered a hog, they made a lot of homemade sausage. And that was the best in the world.
What did you use to make the sausage meat? What parts of the hog?
All the nice lean cuts.
What did you do with the head of the hog and things like that?
They made head cheese out of that.
Head cheese?
Mm-hmm. Boiled it till the flesh fell off of the bone practically. And then run it through a meat grinder. And then press it and lay a stone on it in a jar. I even buy head cheese over here, but it's not like homemade head cheese. And then use a lot of mustard.
When you make it up? Or just
when you eat it.
Oh, when you eat it?
Yeah.
On the side. What did you eat? Did you have fresh meat in the winter when you were growing up?
No, we had mostly salt pork.
Salt pork?
Yeah.
That seems very common around here among it, all the groups.
Sure. You butcher a pig. I told you last time about how they made the brine to keep it cured. Put enough salt in the water that it would float an egg.
Oh, I had forgotten that. And then in a crock or something?
Yeah. They had barrels. And put that in there. Then in the winter you could roll up your sleeve and go down in the brine and cook out a chunk. Then they had the boiler to get rid of the salt that was on it, or you couldn't eat it.
So when you retired, your son took over the farm, Mr. Clavitz.
Yeah.
And you rented it to him for, that's what you were saying, and then he has bought it now.
And he works out. They do things so much quicker now.
He also works somewhere else.
He works at Hurdle, but steady. Then he got 2 or 3 weeks vacation coming when the biggest rush is on for his harvesting, and then that's done. They make 4,000 or 5,000 bales of hay in a week. Him and his wife, they do the baling in the field, and his 3 boys, the oldest is about 13. The next one is a year younger, the next one is another year younger. And they do all the unloading. They have a carrier that goes up and down the line 110 feet. Nobody goes in the mouth. We used to have to tear that hay apart years ago when we made it loosely, you know. That was hard work under a thin roof.
How many bales of hay could a person do in a day, in your day?
Well, we went by loads. If you put in 8 loads, you done well.
A wagon load of,
yeah,
of hay. Did you have a baler?
No. My son bought one. And then I went out baling for him. That was paid in a hurry. 10 cents a bale.
Oh, for other people?
Yeah.
I see.
This day I made $100 for him. That was nice. Me doing charity work and him working out and the milk.
Kept you busy though, huh?
Yeah. I sooner do that than just sit here in the summertime. But now I got an air conditioner in here and I just sit down. Oh, I'd like to drive that tractor yet, but the kids are crazy about doing it. Let them go through it. Oh, they plow and everything else now.
How many acres could you plow in a day when you were farming?
Well, you ought to go pretty strong to make an acre and a quarter.
And now how many acres can they do?
Well, he turned over 25 one day. That tractor was pretty warm.
Farming has changed.
Oh, nothing like it was years ago. Now they use more fertilizer and they use higher priced seed and everything else.